Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
O'Brien.
We are back with more Prime Directive.
So this week is not the surprise.
Surprise. There will be surprises later on, but we are back to Prime Directive. This is part four, correct?
Yes, this is part four. So we're going into TNG movies, DS9, and maybe just a touch...
A Voyager. Just a touch of Voyager. But before we get into that, we got some shocking news.
Shocking. It's painful. It's painful that they did this to us. So at WonderCon this past weekend, they had a panel for Star Trek Discovery, apparently, and they showed a clip, which was a deleted scene from the season finale, confirming the things we've been trying to assess for the entire episode, the entire run of the show,
of Star Trek Discovery.
Yes, of Star Trek. Things we were upset that they never, ever revisited. And this is the time they revisited, and, like, you know, might as well cut it, since that'll bring things full circle. But, yeah, we'll just cut it.
Well, why don't you describe it to the folks who haven't seen it?
So Emperor Georgiou is apparently... She stuck with the people so good that they made her owner of the establishment that she was sleeping at.
She sucks all the dicks and munches out all the pussy.
She is so good at her job. Instead of them paying her, asking her to pay them, they made her the manager. So she is good at what she does. She was empress for a reason in the Mirror Universe. So this Trill comes up to her, a bald Trill, a man Trill.
And this is the first time we've seen a Trill this far back.
Yeah, but we know Trills were around because Jadzia said that she hung out with McCoy at Ole Miss.
Right.
As one of her previous self. So,
but this is the first time we've seen it, like, in, like, you know, like, in a full thing. I mean, other than Trials and Tribulations, sure. Which one? Though, for Deep Space Nine. So.
Yeah, so he's talking to her. He's like, do you ever give any lap dances? And he kind of, like, screws around with her for a little bit. And she's like, you don't talk like a Trill. You don't sound like a Trill. And then he starts talking about, oh, I found you and all this stuff. And he's like, you don't sound like Starfleet. And he's like, well, I'm not Starfleet. I go above and beyond. There's a ceasefire on the Klingon homeworld right now. But there's still a dangerous universe up there. And we think you can make a difference.
And he gives her
the black badge.
It's like getting a black spot what's it called? Treasure Island.
Treasure Island. He's like, welcome to Section 31. And then it leaves, and she, I guess, follows him, because that's end scene. Oh my gosh, this should have been the Marvel Avengers, like, you know, post-credit scene.
Absolutely.
This is where it should have been, because, like, you know, we had our issues with the season finale of Star Trek Discovery, and jamming this scene somewhere before the credits rolled, like at the end, would have been terrible. It would have made that last 15 minutes of disjointedness be even more disjointed.
Right.
But as a post-credit scene, it would have been absolutely brilliant. You know, everyone would be like, did you see what happened afterwards? And it'd be like, no, I just turned it off when the TOS music started playing. And you'd go back and watch it, and then you'd be like, oh my gosh, we were right the entire time. The Black Badge is Section 31. It would have been phenomenal. It's like, you know, they whetted our appetite with seeing the Enterprise at the end, but having that bonus scene where Section 31 is a thing and is the Black Badges and the recruiting Georgiou, that would have just been so much food for discussion that what the next season is going to be. Now that it's a deleted scene, I guess it's technically up in the air whether or not it's going to happen or not. for season two.
Yeah. And another thing occurred to me, what if they have a spinoff show with Section 31? It's sort of like Doctor Who did that. Doctor Who did the Torchwood spinoff, you know, which is sort of like a spy kind of thing going on. So that would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, if they're smart, maybe they would, you know, maybe they introduce more Section 31 in season two and then see if this has any legs that they would actually spin it off to its own series.
I would love a Section 31 series. I want to know more about Section 31 and how they work and what the fuck they were doing during Discovery. Like, what the hell? I mean, like, how did they let things get so bad? I want to know, because, I mean, I don't know. I feel like they should have been doing more. And the way it got so bad, it just feels like they should have been a bigger player in season one.
Yeah, I do wonder if we're going to find out that there's more involved with Section 3. What if Section 31 is a faction of the Mirror Universe people who are operating within the Prime Universe?
I mean, interesting, but they were around in Enterprise.
Sure. And maybe they found their way through that time, too. So I'm just a tease, a thought.
It's interesting. I mean, like, I mean, who knows? I mean, canon's changing left and right. I'm still working on my theory video, guys, so it's coming. I'm going to explain how it all makes sense. But on the, you know, upon first glance, it seems like they're changing. They're fast and loose with canon. So
right.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Absolutely. It's exciting to see, and I think you're right. If they would have thrown that at the very end or even release it as a YouTube clip later on, I think it would have got people really excited.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's out there now, and it is exciting. Some people are complaining about it, saying, oh, it doesn't make sense that Section 31 is a secret agency and they have a badge that people can know, oh, look, it's a secret agency. I'm like, well, what if the rest of Starfleet just thinks they're, like, you know, senior security or something?
Right. Yeah, or I was mentioning before we recorded, it's like, what if that badge has special properties? Like, it can unencrypt files or, you know, open certain things or something like that.
Or get gach from between your teeth.
Oh, that would be great. yeah, so cool stuff and stuff to look forward to for season two, if that's going to be implemented within that story.
Yeah, if that's where season two is headed, I am all for it. I want more Section 31 in my Star Trek. I love it.
No, you do. You are definitely interested in the dark underbelly of Star Trek. You like all that stuff. Well, should we get back into our Prime Directive look back and trying to understand what everyone's up to here?
Yes, sir. Prime Directive. So take it away. What's first on our objective?
Well, we ended with Next Generation, the series, and we left off with the movies. So the next one we have here is Star Trek Insurrection. And Insurrection, I don't. We were talking before we started recording a little bit about Insurrection, about how this would impact the Prime Directive. Basically, the story starts off with it's during the Dominion War, and in the Briar Patch area is a planet with this peaceful race called the Baku, and they basically can live forever
because the rings of their planets that we never see from the surface of the Earth, the planet somehow emit this radiation that just gives them eternal life, pretty much. And their population is stunningly slow and stunningly small for an agrarian population that lives forever.
Seems apparently, like, they just use birth control.
It's against it's technology. They're not. They've abandoned technology.
They practice the rhythm method. to a precision, laser like precision.
Well, I mean, they can slow down time, so I guess they just pull out and just do it all over the face and chest. Thank you, Robbie.
Robbie of Nerdynomicon.
Robbie, so, we've mentioned you twice.
Yes, back to back, actually. So the Federation is in cahoots with these. Do you want to call them brother race or just a offshoot race that are all messed up because of this, called the Sonya?
They are exactly the same race, but they decided to give themselves another name to to make a mystery plot in a movie that didn't need one.
Didn't need one, but they are basically these.
Because I mean, I feel like they're like brothers and sisters and sons to like the some of the main people that we see on the planet. Yes. So I mean, they're not even like as offshoot like the Romulans and the Vulcans. It's like literally direct bloodline.
Right, and Sonya, they have like this whole Brazil thing going on where they're stretching the face back and doing all this cosmetic surgery because since they don't live in this planet, they don't get the effects of, the rings giving them radiation
It's like if these people didn't live on this planet, they all turn into Pizza the Hut, so they got to be stretched.
This movie is interesting. Just thinking back to it because it's been a while since I've seen Insurrection, honestly. And but it has this whole like Paradise Lost theme going on. So with the people kicked out of heaven and everything. So the idea is that the Federation is working with these the Sonya. Then they want to relocate the Baku. And,
harvest the radiation to help millions of other people instead of like the 267 of Sona that live there.
Right.
The Baku that live there.
And, Picard basically just says he just rails against it. So
he only rails against it because there's a MILF that wants to tease his cock, but.
And he's dancing pretty good too.
Yeah, he's dancing pretty good. He's caught the eye of a beautiful young 437-year-old woman.
It's wonderful.
With very firm tits.
She's just like 100 years younger than the girl from Miri that Kirk was flirting with when she just was turning of age, which was a little creepy until you realize she was 300 years old.
Yeah, whatever floats their boats, you know. It's all good.
It's in space. Morality is kind of weird. Anyways, Picard basically just becomes infuriated with Admiral Daugherty saying, like, you know, where does it end? I mean, do we have to relocate 600 people? Is it 1,000, 50,000, a million? And, so he gives that great Picard indignant speech.
I still feel like he's conveniently forgetting the time he was, like, forcibly relocating the Indians.
Yes.
I feel like he's very much forgetting this, and he yelled at Wesley for doing the exact same thing he's trying to do here.
But again,
very double standard of you, Picard.
But that's humans, and they're on a colony for humans, but these are not technically humans, and I don't even think they're really part of the Federation. So
yeah, I don't think so either.
So, I mean, it doesn't apply. And I mean, the fact that they are spacefaring, but they just choose not to go into space. You know, that's their own, that's their own thing. So, and then Picard, they go against their orders and they basically go rogue.
So I would say this is a double break of the Prime Directive. Admiral Daugherty got involved with a planet outside the Federation, and then Picard, broke his orders, which is, I'm sure, some break of the Prime Directive somewhere along the line, just totally ignoring your Starfleet orders, so...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everyone's at fault in this movie,
right? And I don't know. I mean, it definitely has some issues.
But then for some reason, Nemesis is on this list, and I don't know why.
Well, Nemesis. Now that I was thinking back to it, Nemesis is where we have Data goes crazy on that post.
No, that's Insurrection.
Oh, that's Insurrection too. Damn it. You're right. So, yeah.
Because, I mean, like, they were invited by the Romulan, by Shinzon, because Shinzon wanted to meet Picard because he's a clone of Picard. So I feel like there was no Prime Directive break in that.
Right. Yeah.
Because I feel like that was an invite because he wanted to meet his person he was cloned from.
That's a good point. Yeah, because this is listed as a Prime Directive, and I can't even find anywhere that it was even mentioned, the Prime Directive, on this. So,
I know what probably, now that I think back on it, I think the only Prime Directive break in this episode is that they take their four-wheeler to that random planet where they find B4, and they meet a non-warp indigenous race, and they start shooting at them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we think they're non-warp because we don't think they're Reman, but we don't get a great look at them. And, like, that scene was terribly shot. Like, I remember being a child after my dad took me to that scene, and I was making fun of that scene so much because it was so grainy. It's like, I was like, did they just take Star Trek VI and, like, just, like, take the old film and, like, try to re-record over it?
Like, that's fun.
And, like, it looks so bad. Like, as a child, I just remarked on how bad that scene looked to me.
Yeah. I don't... Yeah, that's probably the only thing I can possibly say. I mean, what about any kind of issues with the Romulans?
Shinzon melted or turned all the Senate into sand or whatever he did to them.
Yeah, but that's not technically anybody part of the Federation's issue.
Well, he's a clone of Picard, so wouldn't that sort of make him kind of part of the Federation?
No, but he's not really, because he wasn't cloned by the Federation.
He was cloned by the Romulans.
They just stole his DNA and decided to remake him.
Yeah. I feel like Picard and the crew of Enterprise were invited by Shinzon, so I don't feel like that's a break of the Prime Directive. I mean, they didn't do anything with the culture. They just kind of showed up and were talking with Shinzon, and they got in a fight with Shinzon, because Shinzon's a crazy asshole.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, I mean, I don't see that being like a... And then, you know, the other Romulans teamed up with Picard to take on the Scimitar.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, the only place that this breaks the Prime Directive is them beaming down to the... Or, no, taking the Argo, the four-wheeler, down to that planet... with the other four-wheelers.
Right. Right, and that was actually strategically placed, wasn't it, by
Shinzon. Yeah, he laid B4 out in all these different places for kicks and giggles, I guess.
Yeah, just so they would lead him along so
the fact would follow. That B4 exists at all, like, breaks all sorts of canon. But why wouldn't Noonien Singh tell Data that, oh, you've got another brother? Because he was like, I made lore first, and then right. So all of a sudden there's a B4. I'm like, so B4 is like the slow stepchild that you didn't want to talk about ever.
Oh, I know. It's literally in the way this movie ends, it's probably the most depressing.
The only reason they had B4 there was so that they could kill Data and still keep Data alive.
Right.
So
right. No, of course.
I mean, it's plot convenience, but I just feel like it breaks canon completely, because I feel like Noonien Singh was on his deathbed and he was telling Data all his secrets, but he just kept B4 from him because why? You know what I mean? Like it makes absolutely zero sense that there was a B4.
Oh, I get that. I mean, I guess there could have just been some, I mean, just awful betas of Data before it ever happened. So,
I guess, but.
So are we racking up the Argo chase as a yes of, or maybe a possible?
Well, I mean, like it's similar technology, but then they jump off a cliff into the
shuttle.
Onto the shuttle. So like they definitely contaminated that culture. So I would say, yes, that's a Prime Directive break. And it was a lot of BS reasons why they couldn't beam up the positronic parts because of some kind of ion storm or something. It was really just like, oh, we've got to go down to the planet.
Right, so, exactly.
I definitely would say that's a break. It's a non-warp culture. They got in a firefight with them. They saw technology that's way beyond what they're able to replicate. So I'd say yes.
It seems like this is not the first time these race probably ran into other spacefaring races. They
probably ran into the Romulans when they were placing B4 down there.
Right, yeah. But they had laser cannons and stuff like that. So there must have been other things going, but we don't know. So we don't know anything about that planet.
Don't know. It's unclear. But I would say still, I mean, you're checking out and you're exchanging fire with a race you've never met before. Good first contact protocol, Picard.
Yeah, exactly. And the way he giddily just wants to race around in that Argo. I mean, I heard that there was reason for that was just because...
Picard likes... Patrick Stewart likes off-roading. Likes,
yeah, he likes off-roading, and they wrote that in just for him.
Yeah.
So anyways, So we are now leaving Next Generation, the movies, and we are now moving into Deep Space Nine. We go into the very first episode, Emissary. This was obviously the introduction. It's a very long. They put it in Netflix. They put them together, didn't they? It's not a two-parter.
Yeah, they do that on Netflix. All the first episodes like a double long.
Right.
But,
right. Okay.
Although they played them that way. When they originally play, they always play a two-hour opener.
Did they? I can't remember.
Yeah,
so
they did.
It's a long
except,
so.
Except on Discovery. They split that up into two separate episodes and made you pay for the second half.
Yes, of course. Of course they did. So, Emissary, how do you feel about this one? I was going back and I was thinking, like, you know, I don't know if really anything they did necessarily changes the Prime Directive.
I mean, Sisko becoming the emissary of the prophets, kind of.
It's not really his fault, though.
No, it's not his fault, and he is half a prophet, which you find out at the very end of the show. So, no, it's not his fault. But I can see. I mean, that was always a point of contention between him and Starfleet for like a long time in Deep Space Nine. So, I would kind of guess that's what they're thinking. That's the break in the Prime Directive, that he became, like, involved in this. I know he's there to bring the Bajorans into the Federation, but he inadvertently became their religious figure.
Yeah, religious kind of.
So that,
maybe not quite. Well, he kind of becomes a Jesus Christ kind of character, but, I mean, he's sort of that spiritual.
Yeah, he's like the spiritual liaison between the Bajoran people and their gods.
The prophets. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I would say this is a break in the Prime Directive, just because it's not his fault. They, you know, between the prophets and the Bajorans being crazy, they kind of just put him in that position because, oh, look, the signs are all here. So,
right.
Not his fault, but I can see where they would say it's a break in the Prime Directive because he's interfering with a culture that's not in the Federation, even though they're trying to recruit them to the Federation.
And the only reference here is the Prime Directive's when Picard meets with Sisko, and he says that he tells Sisko that his mission aboard the station has to do everything short of violating the Prime Directive to secure the Bajor's entrance into the Federation, which you could say maybe he did break it. But yeah, not intentionally.
I would say it's a mixed. I wouldn't say it's a hard break because, I mean, it was completely out of his hands.
Right.
But I can see it being like a technical break because it's interfering with like, – you're in the middle of a race's like religion now. Mm-hmm. And they're not part of the Federation. Even if they were part of the Federation, that would probably be iffy.
Right, exactly. So, so it's this later on plays it even compounds issues with the Prime Directive later on, which we'll get into a little bit with him being the emissary of the Bajorans. Next one we have on the list here is Captive Pursuit. This is a fun episode about a alien that
Tosk.
comes from the Gamma Quadrant and befriends O'Brien, but he is a prey, and O'Brien obviously finds it totally objects to the whole thing because it's an awful thing just to chase this poor guy down. But this is what he's there for. This is what he's bred for, and they have to kind of come to terms with that.
Yeah, this is like a mixed one for me because I mean it's morally right what he did. Because I mean, the guy was in distress. He was on a spaceship, so
mm-hmm.
You know the ship was going to blow up if they didn't tractor him in. So I mean, like
they didn't know that, right?
Sure,
there's no way they could know.
Yeah, they didn't know what the circumstances were around this person.
Right.
He's basically like a glorified animal, I guess, to whoever the hunters are.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like this one's a little bit more mixed to me. Like I don't know if it's a hard break. I mean, but O'Brien does remove his comm badge, so he can't be contacted. So, I mean, right. When you remove the comm badge, that's you're either getting busy with someone who's a rank above you or an alien you're not supposed to be getting busy with, or you're acting alone.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to be tracked on this. I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. It's actually, this is for this early season one, this is probably one of my more favorite episodes in season one. It's just interesting, and it's the conflict that O'Brien has with being protective of Tosk. You know, like he feels somewhat like he needs to like almost like a big brother or something like that, take care of him.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like this about this episode. But if a society is engineered for this, and Tosk even in the end kind of like gives the idea that this is what he does. He runs, you know, this is what he's good at. And by, you know, these guys close in on him, and then he, you know, fights his way out. And this is what he lives for. So it's almost like, you know, you're seeing a bird fly through the air and just flying there, and its wings are being held up by the wind draft, you know, without having to flap, and doesn't fall. You know, that's the bird is just, that's how it's designed. You know, it's not going to crash into the ground. This is Tosk. He's good at, you know, running and escaping and fighting his way out of the corners, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he employs O'Brien, you know, to help him, you know, all the better. So maybe Tosk is engineered too, to be somewhat sympathetic too.
Yeah, quite possibly. But you know, the lone Irishman feels he's got to be sympathetic toward the people that are, not as fortunate as himself.
That's always the O'Brien. That's the O'Brien, the Irish side. Is you're always trying to
helping out the underdog.
The underdog, because the Irish are always getting kicked. Yeah. So how do you feel about this? Do you think this is a break? I mean, he helped them, but he's not really like over the top. I mean, they are spacefaring, but they're not part of the Federation. Obviously, the Gamma Quadrant.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is a soft mix. Mixed. I don't feel like it's a hard break. Especially, you know, Sisko yells at him later, but he also, like, Sisko also kind of, like, approves of what O'Brien's doing, because he tells Odo to be like, yeah, don't hurry. Don't hurry to stop him.
Right, right. He kind of lets it go.
And then he yells at him, but then he smiles at the end. You know, so it's like, you know, it's like he's doing his job by, like, yelling at him for breaking the Prime Directive, but he's like, he agrees with him, so it's... you know, I'd say a nice mix, you know, because they don't know anything about the species. They're a Gamma Quadrant race.
Right,
and it's really hard to make first contact with someone who's like, I'm Tosk, and that's all you need to know.
I am Tosk. Yeah, you don't need to know any more about that.
But yeah, Tosk. Are you stupid? I'm a Tosk. Tosk. That's all you need to know.
I am Groot.
I am Tosk.
Yes, it's kind of the same idea,
pretty much.
Yeah, so but it's a good episode, and it's worth seeing again too if you haven't, because I did enjoy this one. This is the next one we have on our list here is Battle Lines. This is the hardest one for me, because this is where we see Opaka go away. And I loved Opaka.
Opaka was great, and then they had to replace her with Kai Wen. Ugh.
Well, it's Kai Wen is the lady you love to hate. She is the perfect villain that just keeps on showing. She's not overt, but she's awful. You just love to hate her. She's great for that.
Yeah, but in Battle Lines, it's kind of like they're on like Ragnarok, where like the ending always comes. They have to fight each other to the death, and only people who haven't died ever can leave. So I mean, I kind of feel like they didn't break their... Because I feel like, didn't they crash?
Yeah, they did crash. The Rio Grande crashed onto this planet. Or it was a moon, right? Noel Ennis. No, that's not that. But anyways, it's like it's a penal colony.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like forever Ragnarok. The ending battle never stops.
So they fight, and then they die, and they, you know,
fight again,
and it's just like they just go over and over. It's like almost like, you know, ghosts.
I love that Mike from Breaking Bad is in this episode.
Oh well, yeah, I forgot about that. But this is where we leave Opaka, and
she's got to stay to be in Ragnarok forever. forever and, die and be killed or and kill others.
Her, right.
Her, I wish they would have come back to this planet. We see like her like be like this crazy Amazon lady, like just fucking killing people. Like painting her face with their blood.
She stops becoming super good and altruistic and just becomes like just huge, like Conan the Barbarian.
Kaiopaka, the Barbarius. Oh, it would have been great.
But she decides to stay in.
She has no choice but to stay. She died. Once you've died on this planet, you cannot leave.
Well, they leave, but Sisko leaving Opaka there and respecting her wishes. And then obviously she wants to bring peace to these people. And
But I thought the thing was like if you left after you've already died, you would just die.
Yes, but still, Prime Directive, Dave. We've seen whole planets get decimated by the Prime Directive.
So bringing back a corpse doesn't violate the Prime Directive?
You could just let her go. Just say, sorry, Opaka, you're coming with us. But technically, Opaka's not in the Federation, so...
No, Bajoran has not joined the Federation, so...
Yeah, this is a hard one, too, because it's not totally overt. You can't really... Yeah, because Sisko doesn't really have any say in what Opaka does.
He has zero say in what she does. She is her own person. She
doesn't have to listen to Sisko.
Exactly. Even though he's the emissary of the prophets.
Yeah. But, right.
Yeah. I don't know. I have a hard time calling this one a break because
it's definitely not a.
It's not like, you know, she's her own person. You know, he respected her wishes.
Right. And. She basically says that she's going to try to like get these people to start working together and hopefully she'll, stop the feud between them. So actually, if you think about it, they're sort of just like, the people, in Baku. They just don't know how to live. They just want to keep killing themselves.
Well, that's why I say like the Ragnarok. It's like you kill, you die, you drink, you feast, and you go back and do it again.
Right. Exactly. It's interesting. So, how are we leaving this one? Are we saying this is a no or a mixed?
I'd say no.
Just because Opaka is not.
She's not part of the Federation. They crash landed. That's out of their control. It was not a willful break of the Prime Directive, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, do you think so?
Opaka is not under Federation. She's not obligated to that. I mean, Sisko could be a dick and try to push it, but he didn't have to. So. It could let it go. And we've seen that Sisko's a little bit, he's not as serious on the Prime Directive as other people. So I would say this is a no. You could kind of put it to a mix, but I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'll say no as well.
All right. So our next episode we have here is The Circle.
It's part of a three-parter.
Pretty early. It was a season two, right?
Yeah. It's the second part of the three-parter.
Yeah. And it's a, what a great like three-parter too, because they kind of like show like the conflicts of Bajor and how they wanted to have this like almost this alt-right version of Bajor for Bajorans kind of thing. Like, you know, we only allow certain people on our planet.
Yeah.
So interesting. This one is listed as a Prime Directive, has reference to it. How do you feel about this one? Because this is...
I'm surprised they would single this one out.
Yeah, because you could do all three, sort of.
Yeah. Let's see.
Because the thing is, so Sisko basically gets told that they're, at the very end, that they're kicking off all the Starfleet people and everyone off of Bajor. And the Admiral calls him and says, Prime Directive applies. The Bajoran power struggle is internal to Bajor. And even if they are the Circle is being backed by the Cardassians, the Federation has no say in it, and they have to respect it, and they have to leave Deep Space Nine.
That's why I think it's funny that's this episode, not the third one, because the siege
is the next one, and that's the one where they hide out and they kind of like fuck with the Bajoran while they're trying to.
It's like this cool covert op episode, yeah.
Right, while Akira and. Dax, right? They try to uncover the evidence that the Cardassians are involved.
Yeah, so I'm really surprised at this episode because I don't.
You could do Circle Siege as the same. You could do all three, but
yeah. I don't know. They were ordered to leave and they didn't. So I would say it is definitely a break the Prime Directive because I feel like orders supersede Prime Directive because it's something that we talked about in the last couple episodes that orders can override the Prime Directive. So if you've been ordered there, even though it doesn't seem right, your orders are what you follow. And they were like, well, Prime Directive applies and you need to leave. And they didn't. So that's a break because they were told to leave.
Right. It's Picard. Sisko definitely was like, in the idea was like, I have to remove all the equipment, so it's going to take me a long time.
That's his excuse. He BS'd his way around it.
Right. He finds reasons to do that. So, yeah, I guess this is a break. You know, the Circle Siege is definitely a break of that, where he gets involved in keeping the Federation and exposing the Bajoran Circle as a covert operation funded by Cardassia, or not funded, but backed by Cardassian interests. So,
yeah,
I mean, it worked out in the end. But
sure. Yeah. I mean, it always does for Sisko.
It always works out for Sisko. So we're going to say that as a yes.
Yeah. And that's season two. And we're jumping all the way to season five.
Yeah.
For the Rapture.
The Rapture. This is where Sisko becoming an emissary messes with things a little bit. Sisko,
I can't believe it took another three seasons for it to finally start messing with stuff.
Right. So this is the Bajor is ready to join the Federation. They have gained permission to join, and everyone's happy about this. And they're going to have a big meeting about it, or a big ceremony. And Sisko decides he's going to obsess about this painting, which he reconstructs on like an obelisk structure. And it has these symbols on it to find the lost city of Bahala.
And he starts bowing to it and wanting to stroke it. Oh, sorry.
He is so into this obelisk. It's kind of like, it's almost schizophrenic.
It's obscene.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. So even
Penis shaped.
It's sort of penis shaped.
I mean, more penis shaped.
Yeah, it would be funny if there's a big penis head on the tip of it. So yeah.
I worship the almighty penis.
Well, while Sisko is using Quark's hollowed suite, he reconstructs this obelisk to try to find the lost city of Bahala, and he gets shocked by a plasma burst because of Quark's shitty maintenance. And
or was it O'Brien's shitty maintenance? Since O'Brien's always the one. I mean, we just did the Suffering of O'Brien, where the Klingons keep messing up the holosuites, and he keeps asking O'Brien to fix it. So maybe it's O'Brien's fault.
Maybe it's O'Brien's fault. But actually, he was saying that Rom's the only guy who can fix it properly.
Oh.
That's what he said in this episode. I don't know why, but but he does blame Chief O'Brien for assigning Rom to not fix the holosuites and fix the sensor arrays. That's what he says. But anyways, so Sisko, by getting shocked, he gets this he gets even more crazy Jesus-like, and he gets like really into this, and he does locate the lost city of Bahala. And then he starts getting like these visions where he can like see the future and the past and the present and how they all work together. And he really becomes a spiritual figure where he's walking around and telling people like, you know, oh, you're going to have a good crop this year of, you know, whatever you're growing. And he even tells the admiral, you know, your argument with the sun, he's not angry with you anymore, or something like that, you know. And he's like, how do you know about that? So
because I do,
because I know all these things. And
and he also knows if the Bajorans join the Federation right now, things will get fucked up.
So this is where it really gets fucked up, because at the he's doing what the orb, the prophecy orb or something like that. He's consulting with it, or I don't know what he's doing. He's like sitting with his box, and he's like going into this deep trance. And he comes out while they're having this meeting about the Bajor being inducted into the Federation. And he comes out and is like, no, you can't join the Federation. You know, what do you say? It'll be like leeches or something. Locusts.
locusts. Or just to eat everything and destroy and leave you with nothing.
So Sisko
gives
this like this dire warning about joining the Federation.
And everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
This is your job.
Yeah. So he's by playing this prophet character and this religious emissary type of character, he spooks all the Bajorans and they don't want to join the Federation. And technically they're not, he's getting himself involved with their society going against the Prime Directive. Now it's a little soft here, obviously, because they're so tightly tied together. So I don't know. I do feel him just being part of this is a break of Prime Directive. I honestly think it's not necessarily Sisko's fault, but it's Starfleet Command's fault for leaving Sisko's in command of all this.
I mean, we talked about this in the first episode where he became part of their, the first episode of Deep Space Nine, where he becomes the leader of, or like the spiritual liaison to their gods.
Right.
And they didn't remove him from the situation before 5 seasons. And like now that's like, maybe we're regretting this decision.
Yeah. I mean, you feel the same way that this is definitely I say this is a break, and maybe not totally on Sisko's shoulder because he obviously is kind of messed up.
Oh, I mean, but like it's really hard to call anything in Deep Space Nine when it comes to Sisko and when it comes to the Bajoran religion.
Mm-hmm.
A break of the Prime Directive because he's not really human. He's half human. He's half prophet. So, I mean, like,
that's a good point.
It's like, it's everything's such a wash when it comes to this, because he's half prophet. He's half fourth dimensional or plus being whatever the wormhole aliens are.
Right.
And the fact that, I don't know if they knew this in the first season and going forward, but it's a fact how it turned out. So any of these things are just like, in a way, out of Sisko's control.
Gotcha.
Because he is unknowingly half a wormhole alien.
He's unknowingly. Yeah, right. But, you know, that being said, it should be Starfleet's command's job to replace him then. You know, that's kind of, it's still a break.
It's still a break, but the thing is, like, the wormhole aliens are basically gods, and so that means Sisko's basically a god, so, like, does his godishhood sway chance? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you know, yeah, it's a break of the Prime Directive because this is the rules, but by him being an unknowing deity, or, you know, something. I mean, like, you know, sure, they're aliens, but to us, as three-dimensional beings that we are, these things are might as well be gods, because we don't know how they do what they do.
Right, of course.
So, I mean, so does that innate deity-ism of Sisko, does that, like, bend chance at everything around him? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting to think about, like, all the things that happened to Sisko and all the things that he does. It's like,
yeah,
how much of this is like fate versus like his deityism, like just making things right for him.
Okay,
and he punched Q.
I know, but okay, but let's look at it in this way. I mean, all that's well taken. But look at the one where Kirk thinks he's or gets thought as a god on that Native American planet. What was it called?
Kirok.
The Paradise Syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same idea, except he wasn't really a god. And
he definitely was not a god, but Sisko is.
Right. But since Kirk was on the planet and he was messing around, he fell into that, like, obelisk thing, which is strange because another obelisk.
The penis strikes again.
The penis, the stone penis strikes again. So you got to wonder. So, I mean, I would say this is a yes. And this is, like I said, it's Starfleet Command's fault for not, you know,
removing him from the situation. I without a doubt, this is a break of the Prime Directive. I just wanted to wax philosophically for a second.
I know, because this is one of your favorite subjects for sure. Okay, well, let's move on. Next one is another one of your favorite subjects, your favorite episodes, is in the Pale Moonlight.
Yes, move on.
It's definitely, we know this for sure. We actually discussed this. I can't remember how long ago we discussed this, but
at least a year ago,
if not more. But this was definitely a huge break where Sisko ropes the Romulans into believing the Dominion are, you know, planning to attack them. And by, you know, employing Garak and a whole bunch of other underhanded things.
Forging holograms, murder.
right. Yeah, yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's such a great episode. It's so anti-Trek, what most people consider like good Star Trek, and this is like one of my favorite episodes. I love the darker side of Star Trek, which is why I love Discovery and I really love Deep Space Nine. But, you know, I'm not even going to pretend this isn't a break of the Prime Directive. Without a doubt, this is a break.
Yeah, and we even get into this the next one that's cited is that the idea that during warfare, the rule of law suspended. So that's I think Sisko takes that standpoint and say, look, the Prime Directive is important, but so is keeping the Federation from not completely being decimated.
Yeah, I mean, it's the lesser of two evils, you know. So I mean, I understand where he's coming from. You know, he's desperate, and people do things out of desperation, and it's interesting to see when he's trying to hold to his Starfleet values, and he's like, I can live with not following it this time. And it's great. I love the episode. It's so compelling.
It's a great episode for sure. And it is such a totally violation of what the Starfleet and Federation is supposed to be about. So that's a big yes.
Yes.
The next episode is another probably favorite of yours is Intra Arma Ena Silent Leges. This is the fun episode where Sloan comes to recruit Bashir into infiltrating some information.
Section 31.
Section 31 shows up. Ooh, and we know in Section 31's anything's on the table.
Absolutely. So, I mean, like, I feel like it's not a break of the Prime Directive because Section 31 operates outside the Prime Directive.
Yeah, but...
which is why it's another reason why we're probably not going to touch Discovery with this Prime Directive talk, because I mean, we don't know if Lorca was part of Section 31 or not, but he was given free reign by the Federation. So I mean, anything he did, whether it was a break of the Prime Directive or not, doesn't matter because he was authorized to. So no point in really talking about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we should. I mean, we're here to talk about it. I think we should say a little bit on it. I think Section 31 is obviously operates out. Well, if it's part of the Federation or not part of the Federation, it operates in its own jurisdiction. Has no. There's no way. It's so secret and nobody can, you know, pull its strings. It's running on its own engine. But Bashir. Definitely gets involved, and under his own protest, but he definitely tries to maybe pump the brakes, would you say?
Sure, but you know, Sisko's also like, yeah, don't tell him no, just find out what you can about these people, because I mean,
I know, I like Sisko gives him the green light, he's like, shouldn't I just not go, you know?
Yeah, you probably shouldn't, but Sisko's like, do it anyway. This will be fine.
And in the very end, we find out that, what's his name? The Romulan Tal Shiar director, whatever his name is, Koval. He is the actual operative of Starfleet. He's their mole. And he's the guy who's going to feed them all the information. So, and Sloan lives in the end, too, which we don't. That's just... You know, hard to believe after he took that phaser blast.
Which is why I always held to the fact that, sure, maybe the spore drive goes away, but it just gets relegated to Section 31, and he could just swap places with somebody, do like a spore swap, just whenever he needs to, just get some innocent random person, just fucking put him in their place and just take the blast for him. There's so much stuff he could do with that technology going forward.
Right. So, yeah, I'm still going to say this is a yes, because he's still meddling in the politics And whether he meant to or not, you know, I mean, obviously he's getting a green light from Sisko and from Admiral Ross. But
well, Admiral Ross is also fully aware of Section 31.
Right, yeah, and
I think Admiral Ross is Section 31, so.
Or at least is tied into it somehow.
Yeah, so. At least he's privy to what some of what Section 31 does.
Yeah, yeah. So, if at least even complicit, you know, it's a break of Prime Directive. I mean, they really shouldn't have got involved with any of that stuff.
That's what Section 31 of the Federation Charter lets you do, though.
So but Section 31 flies in the face of the Prime Directive more than it's in anything. Section 31, it flies in the face of almost of all of the Starfleet charters. So,
but they had that one thing in there. It was there before. I mean, because it was there before the Federation was formed, because it was there in Enterprise, which is fantastic that clandestine organization was there, and which is why they got written into the charter.
Right, right. I agree.
So great.
I know you're in love with Section 31, but it still breaks the Prime Directive, so it doesn't matter. And that there's people involved, like Admiral Ross, Bashir, and even Sisko saying, yeah, find out what you can find out. So he gives him the green light, even though he says, Sloan was in my bedroom last night.
I swear that's a tardigrade device so we can make booty calls. I've said it 100 times. I'll say it again.
That's what you're hoping for. All right. So the next episode we have is Tacking Into the Wind. This is I wasn't necessarily totally understanding why this was called out. So this is another like 3-parter, isn't it?
There's a couple toward the end. So yeah, it might be. I can't remember off the top of my head though. Because I mean, sometimes later in Deep Space Nine, like they have like 3- and 4-parters that don't even really say they're 3- and 4-parters. They just pick up because Deep Space Nine gets really serialized.
Right, right. So Garon starts a reckless attack against the Dominion, and Kira and the Cardassians plot to steal Breen weapon.
I hope we see more of the Breen in Discovery. That'd be great.
How do you feel about this one? I was trying to think of anything that would break the Prime Directive necessarily on this one.
Is this where Worf kills Garon?
That I don't know.
Because if Worf killing Garon, I could see being a definite issue with the Prime Directive. I'm looking at the memory alpha to try to figure it out. Oh yeah, this is the one where Worf kills Garon.
All right, so this would be the reason.
So yeah, I would say that I would say that would be a break of the Prime Directive, having a Federation member basically murder. I mean, granted, you know, Klingons like to fight. And they like to do whatever that Klingons do. So, I mean, Gowron let himself be in this situation.
Right. But that's Klingons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's clearly Klingon, by the way they're acting and everything. It's just kind of funny that's how Klingons are. But being a Federation person and murdering the High Chancellor of the Klingon Empire, because we got to remember, the Klingons, even though they are allies of the Federation, to my knowledge, they are not part of the Federation.
Right, that's true. You're right. They're not part of that. So,
because they still, like, throughout Deep Space Nine, they're still referred to as the Klingon Empire. So they are their own separate entity.
Right, right, so, exactly.
Like, murdering the leader of the Klingon Empire, probably a break of the Prime Directive.
Yeah, good job, Worf. Yeah, yeah. Well, Garon had it coming. He just keeps on being a dick.
Garon is a dick all the time, but, you know, at least he's not a Duras.
True. Okay, so we'll put this a big yes. Next episode we have listed here is Family Business, which is strange because we just jumped from, season 7 to season 3. I don't know why that was listed that way. Not sure if this was just listed as, like, there's a reason for... maybe it was something was mentioned in Prime Directive on this episode.
It might have just been like a mention.
I mean, which is it's a wonderful episode for sure.
I love Ferengi episodes, like in Deep Space Nine. I mean, in Next Gen, they weren't great. My friend, when I worked at the obituary job, my friend Daryl there, I tried to get him to watch Star Trek. He hated the Ferengi when he was watching Next Gen. And I'm like, I know you hate them now, but you will love them come Deep Space Nine. And he's like, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up really liking him. It's just great because, like, it's, I love how like Deep Space Nine just makes everything better.
Deep Space Nine makes everything better. Yeah, but I can't think of anything in this episode that even, because I mean it's basic takes place on the Fringi homeworld. So I mean it, other than like the beginning being, you know, Deep Space Nine and you know that then they go to their home. I don't know. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, nothing strikes me in this one because they are. I mean, maybe the Federation values have rubbed off a little bit on Rom and Quark, and they bring some of that with them home. But I mean, mm-hmm. that's really pushing it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're not Federation members going back to their home, bringing Federation ideals. It doesn't mean that they're breaking their prime directive because they can't because they're not part of the prime
directive. They're not part of the directive. Federation. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't know why this was listed. So we're just put this big no, and I'm not really even sure why it was listed. Strangely enough, so this is as far as we get with what has been listed as prime directive. Nine. Yeah. That's it.
And there were only nine listed, and like a couple of them were pretty hard no's.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes like in the pale moonlight, you can definitely see the reasons why. Emissary, like we said, and all the stuff that's related to him being an emissary, not really Sisko's fault, but maybe more Starfleet's fault in the end for not, like, you know, changing their command. But that's, you know, that's the TV show. You gotta have them. All right, so should we jump into Voyager?
Yes. First episode, Caretaker breaks the Prime Directive, without a doubt. How many ways did it break the Prime Directive? That would be what the count.
Well, I mean, the most biggest one is Janeway protecting the Okapa.
That's not her duty. They're not part of the Prime Directive.
I mean, like I said before, we've had episodes where, you know, we've seen planets be decimated or destroyed, and because they're not part of the, you know, Federation, and they're not developed enough to even do anything. So
for a race that only lives to seven, they're not developed enough. And the thing is, like, she destroys the Caretaker array so that the Kazon don't use it against Okapa, but then she's like, oh, peace out, I gotta get my people home. So she doesn't mm-hmm. even stay and help the people that she broke the Prime Directive
for. Yeah, to save, right.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like nothing about it makes sense.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, Janeway feels bad, but she breaks them. And then she gets involved, of course, more so by staying behind and then dealing with the Kazon over and over again. Dave, I got to say something. I hate the Kazon so much.
How much do you hate the Kazon?
I think they are probably the worst race ever invented in Star Trek. Even
Star Trek would agree with, or the Borg would agree with you, because the Borg don't even bother to assimilate Kazon.
They are literally just so aggravating to even...
On paper, they're interesting, though, because they were supposed to be, like, the wild child, post-apocalyptic kids that, like, just got this technology. But since they didn't cast any kids in the role, except for, you know, Aaron Eisenberg, and granted, he's not a kid, but he's really short.
Mm-hmm.
We do have him show up as a Kazon once, so we kind of get that feel in that episode, but not really, because all the other Kazons are big. The Kazons were an interesting idea on paper. They just... didn't cast them right.
I don't even know about the casting. There's so much about it. I hate their freaking hair. I hate their freaking makeup.
Is it hair?
It's like hair mixed in with like these weird skin plates that come out of their heads. I can't figure out.
Oh, is it they had rocks coming out of their heads?
Oh, they're so fucking stupid. I just can't take it. And we're going to go in deep into Kazon territory here in a minute. And it drives me crazy. I mean, I had to revisit these episodes and I'm just like, I do not like anybody. It's like literally painful for me to watch it.
Such as Voyager.
Yeah.
Well, see the Voyager.
See la Voyager. So Caretaker is a big fat yes. Janeway could have probably just saved her and her crew a ton of problems with just not helping the Okapa, and we would have been saved the terrible characters of Neelix and Kes. So
yes, indeed.
So anyways, Let's move off of Caretaker and now move to Time and Again. Actually, I like this episode. This is...
It didn't seem like you liked it because we mentioned this in our original Prime Directive episode.
You know, I don't think... Did I bag on this one?
Oh, you were just... I felt like you were exhausted with it because it's like Janeway and Paris keep going to that one little place and it's really annoying.
It is annoying, but... But I do. I thought this was like a well written episode. Maybe that's why I like the idea behind this episode. But it does get a little annoying.
Yeah.
Janeway and Paris get swept into this planet where are they like 20th century or 21st century? I'm not quite sure of their level.
Like they're you know
that maybe a little bit beyond where we are, right?
Yeah.
And they're down there, and they got to prevent this reactor from exploding. And they basically get themselves totally involved in their world by their actions.
Yes, sir.
And they're not Federation, and they're not spacefaring. They just shouldn't be there, you know. Not the way they are. So I mean, it just should not be. They shouldn't even be dealing with this planet.
Just like Justice.
Yeah. So what was the reason for coming to this planet? I can't remember. Were they just looking for...
A way home, probably.
A ship passing a red dwarf system, and they find this Class M planet, and they want to just check it out, I guess. And I don't know. It's so bizarre. So it's like... you know, the cool thing is it's a cool idea for a story.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the thing is, I mean, Star Trek, they're always trying to tell a story, which, you know, it's good, but it's just like their internal logic just, I mean, I just laughed because, like, oh, they just saw a planet, and like, oh, let's go look at it. It's like it's the whole thing with Janeway. It's like, oh, we've got to get home. Oh, look, let's go look at this. They're 21st century. They'll have great ways to get us home, right?
Right. it's something. You know, one I didn't put in the list, but it's on here. So Time and Again is definitely a violation of Prime Directive. No question asked. Next one we have is Prime Factors. I didn't put this on the list. I don't know why I didn't put it on there. But this is the episode where this planet has a technology to send a Voyager halfway through their trip. So they could cut their trip in half with their technology. And
like Tuvok is the one who like makes the move and Janeway gets mad at him and then it just doesn't ever pan out.
That's how everything happens in this in Voyager, you know, some of her senior staff goes against her and then she goes, don't worry about it. I'll put you on report. And it doesn't mean anything.
Oh, Starfleet will hear about this in 70 years.
Just, 70 years. Just you wait.
I guess Tuvok would be the only one that would matter to. Because the Vulcans are so long-lived.
Yeah, because he'll live and see that. Right,
you know, but like Harry Kim, 70 years. Like, oh, this will be on your record. 70 years from now, it's like, I'll be like dead.
I'll have cancer on my balls by that point.
Probably.
But Prime Factors is interesting because they are spacefaring and they are very advanced, so they are warp capable. But they end up
trying to sabotage them so they can just get home.
Right. So obviously that's more criminal than Prime Directive, right?
Sure. But at the same time, I mean, I'm sure it violates Prime Directive by acting criminal to a race you've just encountered.
You've just encountered this race and...
We're going to be a giant dick to you.
Yeah.
If it's not violation of the Prime Directive, it's at least a violation of first contact protocol. Yeah, it'd just slap them in the face with your member.
It's strange because this planet that they go on to, Janeway says that it's the irony that this is the first time they are on the opposite side of the Prime Directive where they would not give them that...
that technology, yeah.
The technology for that, like, so...
Oh, man.
It's like, oh, come on, guys, just give it to us.
Just send us home.
Yeah, so that's... it's interesting, I guess, to see it that way and that they're the ones who can't... They can't access this technology that could make their lives so much easier. Now they know how it feels.
Oh, wow. You kept transporters from this race. Now you know how it feels.
It's strange, though, this planet, the Sicaris. is a planet that has this technology, but they're so advanced and they're so chill and they're nice too. But they live like right next to the Kazons and everything, and somehow they're okay.
You're talking about prime factors.
Right, right. Isn't that strange, don't you think?
That is strange, but I guess they got the Kazon under their thumb. Kazon don't bother with them, maybe. Who knows?
Right, right.
Because Kazon's only prey on the weak. And if they're weak, this race probably isn't weak enough for the Kazon to want to bother with them. I mean, the only reason that Kazon's got the balls to keep going after Voyager is because of Seska.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Seska. She's another one. Anyways, about this episode too is they talk about the Prime Directive here, and I just want to read this. It says here, this is the story and script. It says David R. George III and Eric Stillwell's. There's a story. They had the story about the Voyager for prime factors. That what if Voyager encountered a race that had dispatched Gary 7 in the original series to assignment Earth. And that the race had boasted a transporter technology that could transport individuals over thousands of light years. Spore drive, maybe? And according to Stillwell, it says, Dave and I speculated what might happen if Voyager crew happened upon a civilization. What if they had the ability to transport the crew back to Earth, but because of such a terrible failure caused by the intervention of another world in the past, they have adopted their own kind of prime directive to avoid such disasters in the future. This is, in essence, our pitch. And then George continues, as we pitched the story to the producers, though, we realized that they did not want such a strong tie to the original series. And so they spontaneously dropped the aspect of the plot. Fortunately, the producers liked it enough for the rest of the tale to send off with a few notes and invitations to the pitch of the second draft. Eric and I did so, and the version of the episode was sold. So they wanted to just tie into the Gary 7.
I really wish they would have, because it would have been nice to have a little bit more info on what the hell was happening in that episode.
Right, right. It's a fun idea.
And another hot cat chick wouldn't have heard it either, but, you know.
Sure, that would have been great.
Yeah.
So we're going to move off.
We're going to cast you as a cat. You're going to leave me on screen for like about a second.
Yes, and just go meow.
Yeah,
meow. meow. So the next, so we're saying prime directive, prime factors is a break, or do you think this is not a break?
I don't know if it's a break so much as since they failed in their theft of the technology.
But they kind of come off as assholes.
Yeah, they come off as assholes. I would say it's more like a first contact fuck up than a prime directive break.
Okay, so you can't blame that on them. You can't blame Prime Directive break. They come up with first contact assholes. It's like if the Vulcans landed on Earth first contact and they just took a shit right on Earth and they flew away.
pretty much, yeah. Because I mean, I think the reason the Prime Directive came up is because they're getting the Prime Directive shoved in their face and be like, oh, now you know how it feels.
Right, right.
I feel like that's where it came up more than they're breaking it. I mean, sure, Tuvok breaks the rules and tries to, you know, steal it, but he fails.
Right, so. Right. Next episode we have listed here is State of Flux. This is a great Kazon episode where a crew member is secretly sending information to the Kazon. And this happens to be our reoccurring nemesis of Seska.
Seska.
Seska, sorry. Oh, God, she's annoying. I like how there's all these moles there.
I like how she steals Chakotay's sperm. Just like, oh, yeah, I've got a baby.
It's not this one. It's the next
no,
one.
No, I know. Right? But I just think it's funny.
She's trying to, while on a planet, they're trying to gather food. Seska is in the caves trying to gather mushrooms for Chakotay. For his favorite soup, where he gets hallucinogenic soup.
So a stool passes easier.
Yes, quite a bit easier. And this is where we run into the Kazon. The Kazons are in the caves, and you know, there's altercation, and there's reason to believe that Seska might be in contact with the Kazon.
Uh-oh.
So this one is definitely... this one's a hard one because Seska ends up being not even Maquis, but Cardassian.
So it's like, it's She's like so many things wrapped up in other things. It's kind of funny.
Right. I would have to say that this, you know, because she's trying to aid and abet the Kazon, Seska is. But this has, it's really not anybody's fault other than maybe her commanding officers not getting her blood work done. You know,
because apparently she never got hurt enough for the doctor to take a look at her.
Yeah, she was like, he's like, you broke your arm. Shouldn't you go to see the doctor? No, I'm fine. I'll set it myself.
I got a splint. It'll work. I can replicate a splint.
So since Seska never gave her blood sample, they would never know that she has technically Cardassian blood.
It's so funny. Like, it's just like, that's so deep undercover. She's like a triple agent.
Yeah,
it's like oh, I'm Cardassian. Oh, but I'm Maquis. But oh, I'm reintegrated back into a Federation thing. Oh, I'm with the Kazon now, because that's a great alternative.
She definitely plays her options. That's for sure. She's an opportunist for sure.
How opportune is it to hang out with I
would rather have myself shot out of a torpedo bay than hang out with the Kazon. I just hate them so much.
You would just like, oh, I was like, just kill me, just bury me in space alive.
Yeah, I mean, so anyways, you know, Seska is in cahoots, and she ends up, you know, running off with the Kazons later on. And we have this character who keeps on, the first Maj, Kulhu, or Kulhu?
Kulla.
Thank you. And he's sort of this reoccurring character. They're like Team Rocket of Voyager.
Yes, they are the Team Rocket of Voyager.
Seska
is it your third or fourth Pokemon reference since we started?
I don't know. I've had quite a few, haven't I?
Yeah, I love your Pokemon references.
I don't even watch Pokemon that much. It's just my kids watched it so much, so I just end up watching it.
Team Rocket's blasting off again!
I know, right? You're like, oh, Team Rocket, when will they ever learn? So, yeah.
At the same time the Kazon learned.
So this is definitely, I would say this is not Janeway or Chakotay's fault for the Seska debacle.
I can't even know if you call it a Prime Directive break, because Seska's Cardassian.
Right. But her trying to get technology to the Kazons is not their fault.
Yeah,
it's just there's no way they would see that. Even Tuvok makes the mention later to Chakotay that it's, you know, he didn't see it either. So
sure, she's like a triple agent. It's hard to see that. So yeah, I can't call this like a Federation break of the Prime Directive, because Seska's not Federation.
Right, exactly. Well, the next one we have is Seska and Kulla come back in Maneuvers. This is season two. Team Rocket tries to ram a shuttle or some ship into into Voyager on their deck four, into their cargo bay, and steal some transporter component. Apparently, the Kazon don't have transporters.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean,
I didn't realize this. I guess this is a thing. And this is obviously them having that technology could alter the power in the quadrant. And so technically, it's not necessarily, in my view, Voyager or Janeway's fault that this happens. This is an attack, you know, just like the Borg jumping on the Enterprise and, you know, stealing Picard and stuff like that. This is not necessarily anybody's fault.
Yeah,
but it deals with the Prime Directive and the Prime Directive of trying to keep them out of the politics of the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, don't let their, you know, technology interfere. So I mean, they tried to get it back. So I mean,
and they did, or he destroyed it, right?
Yeah.
He destroyed it. And the Chakotay goes rogue and destroys it, and then this is where Seska, you know, when he's out, does a little bouncy on his junk. And impregnates her, and then she later on tells Kulla that it's his child. Boy, will he be surprised when he comes out and see it's a human and not a Kazon hybrid with a Cardassian.
Oh man, that'll be great! I can't wait for that episode.
So, anyways, I'm going to say this is a big no for that. It's just it has it does deal with a Prime Directive.
It does, but it's not anyone's fault, surprisingly enough.
Next episode we have is a Prototype. This, I'm going to say, kind of is a yes, but maybe not entirely, because it wasn't intentional. Prototype is where B'Elanna Torres finds this robot floating in space. And and she decides to bring this robot back. And this friendly robot is so nice.
I'm going to jinky as kajigger.
He does seem like a very nice robot, but he ends up being a complete dick. And he basically... Oh, and can we just talk about the makeup on these guys? I mean, it's like the worst. Featureless
face.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Doctor Who-ish.
It's Doctor Who-ish, and it's like, it's sort of horrifying.
And how nice he talks and everything. And
I will set this into your vulva.
Well, he confuses B'Elanna Torres as a, what does he call her?
Builder.
A builder. He confuses her for a builder, and she's like, well, I'm not a builder, I'm just an engineer. And he's basically, can you come and fix all of us?
Build my people.
He wants more people. And then he finds out that later on that these are not just, he's not just like a single dying race, that there's a whole bunch of them, and they're quite aggressive. And they're basically...
We'll all start our thing into your vulva at the same time. No, please.
That's got to be painful.
That's too aggressive. Just one. This is, one is fine.
But this is what happens, is basically when they find out that these guys are
maniacs.
They've got this program, and they just went wild with it. We didn't talk about this. Did we do this with?
We have not done this one yet.
With Robot Gone Wild?
We did not touch on it with Robots Gone Wild.
We didn't do Robot. We did Androids Gone Wild, right?
Androids Gone Wild.
We never did robots. These are technically robots, not androids.
We did Robots Gone Wild.
We did Robots Gone Wild?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We didn't talk about this one, though.
Oh, we should have totally talked about this one.
Maybe we'll have to do another Robots Gone Wild one day.
Wow. I thought we just did androids. We did Holograms Gone Wild. We did androids.
I thought we did robots. I think we've lumped androids in with robots, though.
All right.
Robots Gone Wild was like one of our like fifth or sixth episodes. So if you guys are confused what we're talking about, you have to look way back.
That's way back.
The way back machine.
Get in the way back machine. Yeah. So this is honestly, I'll say it's a bit mixed because obviously B'Elanna Torres did not know what she's getting herself into. She just saw this as a pet project to like, oh, this guy seems like a really nice guy, you know. He's so chill.
He knows how to treat a lady.
Yeah, you know, and she was like, this is the kind of guy I want to settle down with. And then he's like a raging asshole, and his family's even worse. So, and they just want to take over, you know, the universe. And obviously they get out of this issue. They get away from these guys and, you know, decide never to bother with them again. And this is the last time we see them.
Yep. Which one-off episode.
I would like to see these guys show up again.
The Daleks.
Yeah. Anyways. So I'm going to say that is a mixed.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it was unwitting, but you know.
Right. Next one we have the Kazon Return. Alliances. Alliances is a basically, actually the beginning of this episode was kind of interesting to seeing just the directing of the Voyager was just got away from being attacked, and they're all like messed up, and they're just being pummeled by the Kazon, and they're like, we got to do something about this. This is getting ridiculous. And one of the crewmen die during the attack, and even the crew of the Voyager is questioning Janeway for just not doing something different. Just give them some of the technology. Just give them some, you know, some of the food replicators.
Throw them a bone.
Let them leave us alone. She's like, I can't do that. That breaks the prime directive. But then Janeway says, maybe we'll just make an alliance and we'll just do something. We won't give them technology, but we'll give them assistance. And she contacts Seska and Kala again and tries to make an alliance, but Kala will not talk to a woman. and he messes up this alliance deal. And this is where we run into another Neelix tries to go and talks to this other Kazon group and tries to get them, but then he's imprisoned. And while he's in prison, he gets makes contact with a race that
hates
seems,
the Kazon.
Do they? Well, I guess in deep down they hate him, but they seem chill at the beginning.
Yeah, too chill to be true.
This is too chill to be true, right? So yes, this is the Trabe. That's the name of the race.
They
the
like Trabe like hosts some kind of meeting, and there's like some crazy assassination coup.
Okay, can I talk about that assassination coup?
Yes, you may.
So a ship flies in and just unloads a payload of phaser blasts into this thing, and then the Kazon, after the Trabe ship attacks them, and Voyager attacks back and gets them to the Trabe to fly away, the Kazon just stand up and like, oh, you know, the room is obviously a disaster, but the Kazon are still alive. I'm like, how is that possible? Well, how is that building is not completely obliterated?
It's just like Star Trek in the Darkness with Khan shooting out the Federation headquarters place. It's the exact same thing. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I was pretty like, I'm like, come on. Kula should at least be killed. Oh, come man. On.
No, we can't kill Kula. We gotta keep him. We gotta drag him out as long as we can.
That guy. He's got like a vagina on his forehead. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Good old Kula. Maybe that's why Seska likes him.
Maybe.
Gotta stick that spoon in that vagina.
Anyways, do you consider this a Prime Directive break? That Janeway decides that she technically hasn't done anything necessarily to break it, but she tries to broker a
strange
arrangement between the Trabe and everybody. I mean, is that
because they don't like Janeway? I'll call it a break.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll say it's mixed.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably mixed, but I really don't like Janeway, so I want her to have the highest tally.
It's in the end, she goes, "See, this is why we don't break the Prime Directive,
except for when I feel like it."
Right, exactly. Except when I want to go save the Ocampa.
And then leave them to die the next day. Damn if you do, damn if you don't, Janeway. She's like, right. her whims are just terrible things.
Yeah, they are. Anyway, so we'll put this in mixed. And I don't know, man. I just hate the Kazon so much. I think so bad. So we're going to jump off the Kazon for a little bit here. And we are going to go on to our favorite episode, Thresholds. Which this is like right after it. I think this is the next show right after Alliances.
Yeah, I think I went into our document, mm-hmm. and I just was curious at when they fell into it because I wanted to make sure I put Threshold into the right place. Mm-hmm. So it was like Prototype, Alliances, and Threshold are three episodes back to back, where the Prime Directive is at least minuscule violated, if not completely violated.
Right.
And Threshold, yes. Because yes, Janeway.
For so many reasons.
It's mostly because Janeway and Paris procreate as lizard people, lizard things, and then they leave. Chakotay just leaves the children on this planet. We don't know if there's any other intelligent life. We don't know what kind of ecology this place has. We don't know how bad it'll fuck them up.
We don't even know how intelligent the salamander creatures are.
No, we don't. And the fact that there's three of them. So, I mean, like, even if they do try to keep, you know, procreating, like, they're doomed to genetic dystopia soon. But who knows if that's long enough for them to destroy the environment in which they're in.
So, like, so just a sidebar for all this is I can't remember when I was watching this. Maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago I was watching this. And, my family was in the living room with me while I was watching it. And my wife, you know, she watches Star Trek, but she's not really into it, you know. And she was watching it. And at the very end, when she saw that they left the babies there, she goes, wait, so just left those babies there?
Yes.
It was like that was her takeaway. She was like, they just left all those lizard babies on there? It's like, yes, that's a terrible episode. And this is the low point of Star Trek in a lot of ways. There's a couple Next Generation, and obviously there's a couple original series that are pretty bad.
Yes.
But this is probably the worst in writing wise.
And the thing is, like, if they would, like we said when we talked about this episode, if they would have played up the horror aspect and maybe put some kind of alien in that tenth speed bubble, where like he purposely manipulates, Tom Paris's DNA and changes him, that would have been cool, that would have been scary, and that would have been interesting. But the fact that just the speed alone does that was just so stupid. It was just like, just a small little rewrite like that could have changed the entire episode.
Yeah.
And made it at least bearable if they would have played up the horror aspect on it.
Right.
But they didn't, and they just like chalked it up to evolution, and that somehow velocity and changes evolution. That's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I would say that's a yes for them leaving the salamander babies of Janeway and Tom Paris on the planet.
Yeah, even if there isn't a culture there, that's contaminating a planet or a moon or whatever it was. It's contaminating it for who knows, like, untold generations.
Right. Completely alter the whole biosphere of that planet.
Yeah, evolution may not happen the way it was meant to, now that these crazy, quote-unquote, super-advanced human ancestors are on this planet now. So it's just...
We should do fan fiction of what happens after those super-intelligent salamanders end up taking over part of the whole Delta Quadrant or something like that.
Who knows? But I think we'll have to take a break here and finish up Voyager next time. On the Prime Directive.
Part 5?
Yes, part 5 with a question mark.
Part 5? It's more to come?
Oh my goodness. This is longer than our Klingon multi-parter, but...
Well, we leave no stone unturned.
No stone unturned. Everyone's like dying for us to get off the Prime Directive. It's like, get off it.
No more Prime Directive, please.
We were hoping to have a interlude this week, but unfortunately we weren't able to get that done. Family issues and whatnot. But hopefully soon we'll have that. And Stuart Foley from Trek Yards, he's been asking to come back on, so we do want to give him a chance to get back on the show, because it's always so great to talk with him.
Absolutely. So buckle up. Barring unforeseen incidents, we will have one more Prime Directive episode coming your way.
One more, and then you'll be thank God.
Thank God. Just don't worry. We have to watch all these Voyager episodes again. So
it hurts us too, guys.
It hurts as much as it hurts you. So.
But some people love Voyager, so maybe it doesn't hurt that bad.
Yeah, a lot of people do like Voyager. There's glimmers of Voyager I do like, but then sometimes I'm just like,
some gems in Voyager.
Yeah, and like we're going to do a few of them, like the Scorpion and Equinox, Omega Directive, and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a couple that are fun in this one.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyways.
All right, well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter, although our intro is provided by our friend Dave Wilkes. He did that wonderful intro for us. As far as the show goes, you can find us online at syntholics.com. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/syntholics for the podcast and for a theory video that I'm working on. Since I injured my leg, it's been a lot harder to work on the computer, so I'm trying to get that done as soon as possible.
He's got a gammy leg.
Gammy leg. You should all eat me now. but not in the sexual way, but just make me dead. But I'll feed you.
It's a Monty Python lifeboat and skit. Life Look it up. Skin. YouTube.
Yeah. Aaron sent me that the other night. It's like, this reminds me of you. It's pretty great. I've watched it several times since, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm John Cleese.
John Cleese.
Yeah. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. If you've got anything to say about the Prime Directive soon, this week is the time to email us and give us your thoughts and dreams and desires about what the Prime Directive means to you, because next week is hopefully our last Prime Directive episode for a while. So if you guys have anything to say about the Prime Directive, say it now or forever hold your peace.
That's right. Exactly.
And you can email us there at Synthaholics@yahoo.com and join the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Synthaholics, where we have all sorts of fun and all sorts of discussion there.
Yeah, definitely. And go on to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Give us 5 stars and make a nice comment about us. Tell us how we just keep on talking about the Prime Directive. These people are obsessed with the Prime Directive. And it definitely, if you have a chance, go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics and throw us a buck our way. A buck a show. It's not much to ask. A buck a month to help support the show. We would definitely appreciate it.
That's cents per episode.
Yeah, it's like nothing. I mean, nothing. So if you listen to us and you want to support some local hardworking podcasters who are just working for you, go to our Patreon page. We appreciate it.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. And if you know friends, family, co-workers,
concubines.
Concubines, Section 31 operatives, very good. I like operatives that might be interested in podcasts or into Star Trek. Let them know about Synthaholics. Let them know about what we do, how we're doing a 5-part series on the Prime Directive. Who does that? Who does that?
I don't know.
We do.
I think we might be the only one of them that long a series on the Prime Directive.
I think so, too. So let them know that we are out there and we are fighting the good fight of Star Trek.
We are crazy.
These guys are fucking nuts. So, yeah, let them know. We appreciate it. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to support the show, even by sharing or retweeting. Wonderful way to support us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But buckle up. We are going into season 5 of Prime Directive.
This is the year of the Prime Directive, guys. Last year was the year of Voyager.
Just Prime Directive. We're just going to labor it.
Forever. No, no. After part 5 of the Prime Directive, we will change gears, I'm sure. We'll
do something else, we promise.
We'll stop torturing you, we promise.
All right.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you so much for putting up with the Prime Directive. We hope you're enjoying it. And live long and prosper, one and all. Have a great night. Day and good morning. Before the night's over, I'll puke in a sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I